Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Michigan Literary Network Radio for Wednesday, February 1st, 2017. I'm Andrea Daniel, and today my guest is Veronica Dale, author of the four-part epic high fantasy series Coin of Rules and the short story collection Night Cruiser. And I have Veronica Dale on the line, or Vernie, as she gives people permission to call her. Welcome to Michigan Literary Network Radio, Vernie.
Thanks a lot, Andrea.
I'm so glad you put that permission on your website. I think that's a nice little touch.
Yeah, okay. My mother, when she was mad at me, she called me Veronica, but most mm-hmm. people call me Vernie, so it resonates nice.
Right. So, Vernie, let's talk about your books. How many books do you have? I did mention the series Coin of Rules. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Rules?
Well, actually, it's Rolve, but
Rolve, okay.
Yeah, Rolve. And I've got three books. The first one came out in December of 2014. That was Night Cruiser, the short story mm-hmm. collection. And then in 2016, last year, two books came out. The first one of the Coin of Rolve series, Bloodseed, and that one came out in January. And then the second book just came out before the holidays, so it was like early November or December. So I've got those two and two more in the wings.
Ah, okay. So what are they about? Let's talk about the subject matter of these books. You've got, you've got these books that you've released. Let's talk about them. Tell us a little bit about them.
Oh, yeah. That's a question that every author loves. Everybody, we all want to say, tell me about your book. But way deep down, we all think, yikes, because most of us have been working on these books for years, you know, and oh, my goodness, there's this going on and that going on, and she says this to him, and oh, they don't know that, and all of that, so it's complicated, but I'll do my best. The story is really about twin brothers, Sheft and Teller, and they were born in a land that was once, but it's now being, strangled by a very powerful, ambitious, but paranoid king, and he rules from a stronghold deep inside of Inchir Cliff. And he uses his strong arm methods to control his people, but he enforces all this by a terrible pollution that he brought upon the land, so it affects the people's crops, it keeps them in poverty. He is the only source of a addictive drug that he's the only one that sells and that our people are needing because they're in bad straits. And he also indulges in child slavery. So the land is in bad shape. And this king is always on the hunt for the twin brothers that have been kind of like predicted are going to come to an end of his reign. So these are the boys, Sheft and Teller. And throughout most of the series, they're 18 or 19 years old. They don't know hardly anything about each other because they've been separated as infants in order to protect them from this king who is hunting them. So they grow up in communities apart from each other, and they're treated badly, very badly by the communities. And they both have scars on their backs to attest to that. But through all this turmoil that they experience, they have a feeling that they should be doing more. There's something deeper inside them. They have a call, but they can't figure it out. Life is too hard. One twin is raised by a judgmental father and a kind of troubled mother, and the other twin only knows his grandmother. So one of them, or they both, in their different, discover in themselves power. But one tries to stifle this power. He doesn't know anything about it. It seems dangerous and deadly to him, isolating. One tries to stifle the power with ice, and the other one misuses his power as fire. So that's the general gist of it. And the whole series consists of like four books. And the first three deal with one with the one twin, the second one with the second twin, and the third one with the community they were born in. It's a small community, and they have their own problems. And it involves the women that love them, different story arcs, different settings, different problems that each twin encounters. And they resolve certain problems, but not all of them, and not always for the good. So all these stories are connected, and they kind of run into each other. They're like kind of like three big rivers that form this like powerful river at the end, kind of like the Mississippi, I guess. Mm-hmm, so that's sort of the gist of what it is.
Okay, wonderful. Very good. Very good. Now, I want to read a little bit of your bio to get to my next question. And your bio reads, how can failure lead to redemption? How does love take root in the worst of situations? These are the questions that drive my fiction. As a pastoral minister who's worked with people in crisis, I have been inspired by those who find the courage to turn away from despair, work through the darkness, and emerge from failure with strength. Although spiritual undercurrents run through all of my work, my main goal is to tell a whopping good story, a whopping good tale. So my writings include ghosts and ancient blood rites, a dark lord called the Spider King, a subterranean stronghold where fire is forbidden, and rivals who battle each other with powers like needles and saw. So my question here is, how does your background as a pastoral minister reckon with your writing with, you know, themes like ghosts and ancient blood rites, a dark lord, a subterranean stronghold where fire is forbidden? As these are the themes in your writing. I mean, you use these subjects in your bio like they're just the normal, natural thing to write about because your goal is to tell a good story. But you have a ministry background. How does that jive?
Well, I think it does because I'm of Polish descent, and I had a grandmother who would tell me kind of ghost stories, which she said she actually experienced. And I'm named after her, as a matter of fact, Veronica. And she was born on Halloween. So, you know, she would tell me stories, and I loved her. I thought that was really cool. My sister and I would listen. And then when I got a job, you have to go to school and get your degree and all that for pastor ministry. And I worked at a church in Southeast Detroit area. And my job was in Christian service. I was a pastoral minister of Christian service. And people would come to the church with real problems. They would have medical bills. They would car repairs. Their work hours were cut. And, they were really struggling. Some of them had a lot of grief issues, you know, an unexpected divorce, a death of a child, death of a spouse, things like that. But many of them still kept their faith alive. They kept their belief in somebody was going to help them, the church was going to help them, God was going to help them. And a lot of them gave me the inspiration that no matter how dark the tunnel is, there's light at the end of it. And I appreciated that. And then when I was going through getting my degree in ministry, I guess you'd have to say my faith kind of deepened. And I began to see the truth. And a lot of people are concerned now about the truth nowadays. Mm-hmm. But it's bigger than one person's view of it. To me, it's kind of like a big diamond with all these facets. And one person sees one facet and another person sees another. And in order to get the true picture, everybody has to share what they see out of it. And I was grateful for that kind of insight.
Okay, I see. So, I see how you say that you take your spiritual, your writing has spiritual undercurrents, but you combined what your grandmother gave you with all of that, and that is her love and her interest for dark stories, ghost stories, and you weave all of that together in your writing.
Right. There's so many roots to a writer that sometimes you're not even aware of them, but it's amazing how deep and big the world is, and that's what I kind of, one of the things that I hope people would take out of my writing, that stuff about the truth that I said, and that in the stories themselves, there's in all good stories, there's different levels, and you can read them like on a thriller action kind of a level or a ghost story level, you know, and enjoy it. But in all my books, I have questions for discussion, and I hope that people will kind of look at them before they read the story or even after, and it'll help you maybe read it on a different level, a little deeper one, a little deeper story, and that's what I think would be really cool.
Yeah. Definitely. I love those guided questions at the back of stories.
Too.
They are really helpful to, you know, open up your insight into maybe what the author was trying to get to. So how would you describe your writing style though, Veronica?
Well, you know, I never really thought about it. But then my books start getting reviewed, and the reviewers would say, oh, you know, the writing is intense, or it's, one lady said, poignant or intricate narrative and all of that. And I thought, wow, that sounds really good. And I was grateful for that and excited to hear that people had that good view of it. But what I really wanted to do was to write clearly, to make sure people understood what was going on, you know, on a level that would be understandable and reachable for everybody. And another thing, though, that was even as important was getting the emotional element across, getting across what Schaft was feeling, what Teller was feeling when they were facing these terrible problems that they had, and letting the reader feel what they felt. That if I could do that, I'd consider myself a success. And one of my editors said when she was editing the book that at times she would be crying. And I thought, you know, I felt so good that somebody got it. Somebody said all good art makes you feel. And I think that's correct. I like that.
Definitely. Why? Let's stay there for just a minute. Why was it important for you to get across the emotional level of the characters, to really hone in on their feelings? Because these are men, and men, you know, Schaft and Teller, men aren't necessarily the emotional type, you know, even though we know they feel, at least we figure they feel, but, you know, they're not necessarily the emotive type of people.
Sometimes a man doesn't even know what he's feeling at times. Schaft and Teller are facing bad situations. They don't feel sorry for themselves in the story, but the reader does. The reader might even resonate with, like, the one twin who didn't know his father, just a grandmother. You know, there's some people that have that experience in life. Another twin has a very judgmental father. He expects a lot out of his son. And his mother knows a little bit more about his background, but she's aloof and she's troubled. So, and then I think it's important when you read, they say that when you feel what others are feeling in a book, you develop empathy. And that's an important thing for our world, as we're getting to be more of a global community. And if you can walk in somebody else's shoes just for a little while, you know, while you're reading the book, it makes you feel for them. You know, you mm-hmm. have more empathy for what people are experiencing, you know, crop failures or maybe a global disaster of some kind. And it's not that easy to just brush off their experiences once you've kind of experienced it yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've read, as a matter of fact, that the brain can't really tell the difference between listening to somebody face-to-face tell you, you know, what they've been through and reading about it, that it'll really sink in both ways.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. How are you able to tap into the male psyche the way you did in order to, you know, in order to get these emotions across to make it sound like a man and not like a woman writing about a man or writing in a male voice, you know?
You know, that's funny that you should bring that up, because when I had kids, yeah, I only had a sister, mm-hmm. grew up with only a sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I had a daughter. Okay, good. And then I had a son, and I thought, how am I going to raise this little boy? I don't know anything about men, you know,
uh-huh.
because my husband was a big help. And then they do say that, Carl Jung or psychologists say that inside of women is kind of the idea of a man, because your psyche wants to be balanced, you know, so they want to have some male qualities and some female qualities. And so inside of every woman, I think, is what we used to call male characteristics, but what they're just human characteristics. And it's your desire to make your mark on the world, to succeed, to when a rival is going for you, you want to defend yourself. And I think that came from there, I guess, from inside. I don't know. That's
definitely
a good question. I've never been asked that before.
Well, you answered it. You answered it well. You know, you answered
to the
best truth of your ability. So you mentioned earlier what you hope readers will find in your books. You mentioned the truth. You mentioned that you want them to realize the different levels to a story and possibly the different levels to life. Is there any other thing that you want to add to that particular answer about what you hope readers will find or get out of your book?
Well, one thing I hope they get out of my book is the inability to put it down. I love it. The day I couldn't put the book down. Or
right.
This irresistible drive to buy the next one. That would be great if they could find that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in a deeper way, I think I would like for them to pick up on certain things I learned when I was in pastoral ministry. And one of them is the idea of Teresa of Avila, St. Teresa. She always was very calm. She said, let nothing disturb you. Let nothing frighten you. All things will pass away because God never changes. And that's sometimes how those people felt that came to the church. They had this faith that they were going to get through this with divine help. And one of my favorite books that's so inspiring to me is Lord of the Rings. And the author, Tolkien, he used to write about what he called the U-catastrophe. The U-catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
a catastrophe, something terrible, that can be redeemed. And Christians, you know, we read that in the Passion narratives. It was a terrible thing that happened, but it was redemptive. And I think a lot of books, good books, have that theme buried deep in that. Bad things can be turned to good. And I think that's very thrilling when I find that in a book. Even Carl Jung, he wrote a lot about the shadow. And that shadow is that dark part of yourself that you don't want to look at. It's weak, it's bad, it's this, and you don't want to look at it. But the more you meet the challenge of it, because we all have a bad side, but the more you meet the challenge of it, the more you'll find an inner light. And I thought that, too, was a great thing to have, to believe. So, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. The more you meet the challenge of your, I'm writing, too, of your shadow self. Say it again.
The more you'll find your own inner light. So, there's other authors. You think Harry Potter, you know, he lost his parents. Frodo, at the end of Lord of the Rings, he really couldn't throw the ring in the fiery pit. The Gollum had to do it for him. So they kind of failed, or they started out with bad things, but all of their actions were redeemed at the end, and you had this great story.
Definitely. And I just got to take a quick minute to say my guest today is Veronica Dale, author of the 4-part epic high fantasy series Coin of Ruvay. Hopefully I said it right this time. And the short story collection Night Cruiser. Thank you. So, Bernie, when did you first think of yourself as a writer? Because, you know, your books first came out in 2014. You had books in 2016. But maybe you've been writing for much longer than that. When did you think of yourself as a writer?
Well, I always was a person who loved to write. I wrote my first book in grade school. It was by hand and lined paper and all that. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of nonfiction for the Archdiocese of Detroit study guides, like. And so I was writing really all my life. And then when I was at the church as a pastoral minister, I had like what we'd call now a blog, but it was like a feature article every month. And I did that for, you know, years and years. So I had always been writing, but it was nonfiction, and I wanted to write fiction. And so I started writing the short stories, and the one got published, and then the others got published. And finally, I was more, in my own eyes, than a writer. I was an author, because for me, you could write till the cows come home, but you're not an author until you sell something. And that's when that happened. So maybe a little crass, but that was my definition. I was a writer for a long time, but became an author in December 2014 with Night Cruiser.
Okay. And what do you find most challenging for you as a writer? Every writer's got their challenge. And what is your challenge as a writer?
Actually, it's letting other people know that your book is out there, letting people know that your book exists. So that would be marketing. And and I'm not the only author, writer, whatever, who believes that. We're all challenged by it because most of us are introverts. You know, we write in solitude and all that. We love people, but we need to be alone at times. It's hard for us to blow our own horn or put ourselves forward
right.
in a way. And that's sort of what marketing is. And that's what I find very challenging. It involves, a certain amount of technology, and that's always changing. It seems like you're always catching up with something that you just learned, and then it's changed. So, you have the Facebook, you have the Twitter,
right.
you have LinkedIn, you have your website, you have your blog, you have, your email list and everything. And these all have, there's all a learning curve for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a challenge. And meanwhile, while you're doing all this, you're not writing. So
right.
it's a little challenging.
Right. Yeah,
some
definitely.
Authors take it like duck to water, but many don't.
Yes. I understand completely.
You're kind of an author yourself, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and that's also the hardest part for me is tooting my own horn. I want to find somebody else to toot my horn for me.
Me too. I'm with you there.
So, and this is a question I like to ask many of my guests who are writers, and why are you a writer? I mean, what drives you to write? You could be doing anything. You could be doing more pastoral counseling, you could be, doing anything else. Why are you a writer?
That's another good question, too. For most of my life, I remember the feeling that I had, no matter what I did, went to school, got degrees, everything, that I have to be accomplishing something. There's something that I have to do. And I wasn't really sure what it was. And we did a lot of things, you know, my husband and I, and traveled and worked for the church and everything, and that was great. But I don't know, somehow it was all these stepping stones. You learn all this stuff, you internalize all these things, and somehow it has to come out. You fill up the well, you know, and it's got to overflow somewhere. So that's the only way I can explain it. Like, it was something I had to do. And my husband knows that when I don't write, I get grouchy. So I must be on the right track.
Absolutely. And outside of, we've got a few minutes left, outside of family, because family always supports us because they love us so much, who else has supported you in your writing journey?
Oh, that's an easy question for me. It's I don't know if you've heard of Detroit Working Writers. And it's 115 years old, and it supports writers. I don't think I would be on this publishing journey as quickly as I got there without them. They have a writing conference every year. They have like workshops that you can go to. And through them, I got into two critique groups. And they were wonderful people, my novel critique group and my DWW critique group. And you can bring your stuff, you know, every month or whenever you meet. And they listen to you and critique you, and you do it for them. And, boy, do you ever grow from that. So it's those things, Detroit Working Writers and the critique groups that I'm a member of.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. That's good information to know. Detroit Working Writers, I've heard a lot about them. And last question, how can our listeners keep up with you online?
Well, I do have a website, and it's just my name, www.veronicadale.com. I am on Twitter and Facebook. And if you go to my website, there's a way where if you want to, you can like sign up to be on my email list. And I get an email out about what's happening, what's going on, about my books and other things. And I don't spam people. You know, the email only comes out, you know, not every day or every week or even every month, but I do it regularly. So any of those ways.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Veronica Dale Burney, for being with me on Michigan Literary Network Radio. I'm so glad that we were able to spend this time, and you gave me some wonderful information. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Andrea. It was really nice. I appreciate this.
Okay, you're welcome. Good night.
All right, good night.
And that's it for this edition of Michigan Literary Network Radio. Be sure to check back on next week at 5:30 to 6 p.m. to hear more literary good stuff with my guest, Stephen Jones, author of August Snow. Keep up with us on MotownWriters.com, and you can find the Michigan Literary Network and Motown Writers on Facebook. And I am Andrea Daniel for Michigan Literary Network Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you being there. Good night.